Welcome to the Delta Flyers. I'm your host, Garrett Wong, and of course, my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Well, hello there.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Hey, man. Hello, sir.
Hi. Hello. Hello.
How are you today?
Hello. I'm okay. I'm wearing, as you can see.
Oh, nice.
For those of you listening, I have a new Delta Flyer shirt on.
So, very bright and poppy. And
well, it's white, which is, you know, I'm not a big fan of white shirts, but we'll see.
But it looks good. Yeah, we'll I think we'll it looks see. Good.
Okay. Okay, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Wander North Georgia hat. It's a little company out of North Georgia, in Georgia, where I lived. They make sort of outdoorsy things, and this is sort of a hat in the style of the National Park Service. It's got like orange and, but anyway, I
it's
love
very
this
cool though. I like it.
I love
you
this
also.
Hat.
You love it also because it's orange, and that's something that I've discovered from this doing this podcast with you is that that's one of your favorite colors.
Orange is yes,
and I never knew that. Like the entire time that we were working on Voyager, never once did you say, "Hey, man." Or if you were saying it, you'd be like, "Hey, man, I love orange." And no, you never said that. So
I don't know when I discovered that orange is one of my favorite colors, but it is. All my glasses cases are orange. My cell phone. Here we go. I'm holding that up. Orange case.
You should have been on Orange is the New Black with Kate.
I should have been. I really should have been. Yeah, I
oh
like orange.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
We should orange make an orange Delta Flyer shirt or hat or something.
Or hat. We could do a hat.
Okay.
But no, you know, no, I'll tell you what. An orange shirt, why not?
Why not?
Right? In reference to you and how much you love it, to honor your, you know, your
Let's
favorite color, why we should do an orange shirt at some point.
That's a good, that's, I never thought of it, but here we go.
Here
this is what
go.
Happens
here
on the Delta
go.
Flyers.
Here we go.
We just come up with these amazing ideas, and before you know it, there'll be an orange shirt.
So this week's episode is Rise.
Rise, yes.
Or I could say Rise. I could spell it the French way. Rise.
Nice. We didn't have any fancy. Well, we had vis-a-vis. That was sort of a
vis-a-vis. Yeah,
and that was a. I'm trying to think of titles that weren't like English words or something.
Yeah.
Rise.
Yes.
I am very excited about this because I know we've talked to Ethan Phillips and to Tim Russ, and whenever we've mentioned you know these recaps, this is one episode they both have said is one of their favorites. So I'm excited to review this one. This is going to be. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. Let's go watch this episode, okay?
Let's and go then, watch Rise. I'm very excited.
Me too.
I'm excited because Tim and Ethan are excited. So
okay.
Let's go do it.
Excellent. Let's go do it. All right. Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey, guys. We're back from watching Rise.
Yes. We're now settling
Rise.
Down.
We Can you rose? Rise with me?
We rose and now we're coming back down to earth to talk about our journey.
Yeah. All right. Yes. Okay. So before we start with our recap, let's do our poetry synopsis.
Okay.
So tell us, what is your haiku for Rise?
Here we go. Let me get to the haiku. This was I'm pretty proud of this. I think this captures the whole episode, really, the heart of the episode. So here we go with my haiku. Because that's what poetry does. It really distills to the essence. Here we go.
Yeah.
For the episode of Star Trek Voyager, Rise, our haiku synopsis. Neelix wants to help. Tuvok has no faith in him. Together, they win.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I feel pretty. That's what I'm saying.
Like, that one, that was
it's like clean. Mm-hmm. It gets it. Yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
That was clean and crisp.
Yes.
You know, if you're able to give an adjective, that's not an adjective you would typically use. Crisp is how that one came.
Yes. Well, right? Limericks are much more complex. So
They are.
Let's get ready for your complicated limerick.
Okay, here we go. Neelix assigned to Tuvok's rescue mission. Crash leaves all in a dire situation. Carriage flies, Vadim dies. Vulcan logic loses to intuition. There you go.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
You're getting better and better and better at this.
I took a lot of time. More time than people will actually know. I mean, I would have to say that the time it takes me to recap or watch an episode, it's longer for me to come up with the limerick than it is for me to actually
watch the whole episode.
Yes. That's all I'm going
to
say.
You're almost done. You're almost 33. And then I will jump back to the wacky limericks.
Thank you.
I'm not afraid.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Story by Jimmy Diggs. Yeah. Teleplay by Brannon Braga. And directed by Robert Shearer, who I don't remember him at all. This is bad. What does he look like?
You know what's funny that you say that? I don't really remember him either. I remember the name. I remember that he was involved in Star Trek. I think he directed, you know, maybe between all the different Star Treks, a dozen or more episodes. I mean, he directed a bunch of them, but yet I don't really remember him. I gotta be honest.
I'm typing his name into
Try to find a photo
see
or
an
something.
Image of this guy, definitely, because it really bothers me that. Wait, is this ringing a bell?
A little bit, yes, a little bit. Like the one sitting in the director's chair, or the one in the blue, that photo in the blue.
Yeah.
That looks a little closer to what I remember. But honestly, I don't remember him very well. I think he was a bit of an old timer director, meaning he had, you know, been doing this for decades
and
was nearing probably the later years of his directing career. I don't remember Bob Shearer at all, but I remember the name.
Let's just say he was also an actor. So December 28th, 1929 was when he was born in Santa Barbara, California.
Wow.
And he passed away March 3rd, 2018. So this is a few years ago that Mr. Shearer passed away. And I'm so sorry to his memory that I cannot recall anything about him directing us. Or even how I don't even think I had any interactions.
A lot of directors come through, though. We really had a lot of directors, and
And
if he was kind of a quiet personality, I bet
maybe.
I know, but I feel the same way.
Come on, we should be better than that. we should be better, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy Diggs, anything to say about Jimmy Diggs?
No, just that, you know, over the years, Jimmy has always been someone who I've seen, like he'll show up at different conventions that I've been at. Yeah. And he'll just say, "Hey, Garrett, Jimmy Diggs here." And he's, you know, one of those people who have sold stories to Star Trek, you know, over and over again. So
I bet a lot of fans have met him then if he goes to conventions and appears there and participates, that he's probably met a lot of fans and told a lot of great stories.
Right. Didn't we talk about the Samantha Wildman connection? Like it was someone who had a liver transplant, or something along those lines that he was the one that came up with that name, I think. It was a real life person. Like right.
I think he's made a lot of contributions. I've never met Jimmy that I can recall, but
okay.
And then so he would sell the story. He'd pitch the story to the producers, and Star Trek was one of the last places where outside people would pitch. We've talked about this a little. Would pitch stories, and if they liked the story idea, then they would pay them money. They'd buy it from them, and then they would go write it with the writers on staff. So that's why Brannon wrote this script.
Yeah, and that pitch can be very short and succinct, or it could be more detailed, right? I mean, it's an outline of what he believes the story to be. And then, of course, Brannon is the one who writes all the dialogue or puts into the dialogue and the setting and everything, the teleplay. All right, so we open up the very first scene on a view screen image of a lone asteroid tumbling and hurtling toward a random planet.
Very dramatic asteroid headed towards, and a very dramatic shot by Bob Shearer, the director.
Yes.
It starts on Paris and kind of pans over towards Tuvok. And then we see some alien visitors on our bridge. And then the captain stands up and she walks towards the view screen, this dramatic asteroid shot. And then she suddenly looks very, very thoughtfully at the screen and says, okay, fire or something. She said, right. You know, or go or something. I don't remember exactly what she said, but here's what I remember. Do it, something like that.
Yeah.
But when she says that, it's very dramatic. Mm-hmm. And then we cut outside and Voyager fires a photon torpedo or something and blows this thing up. Mm-hmm. And it breaks into pieces, and then we hear, uh-oh, all of these fragments, instead of disappearing and incinerating there.
It's vaporized. That's the word you're looking for.
That's the vaporized word I'm looking for. Instead of vaporizing, it actually breaks into chunks, and now there's a bunch of chunks heading toward the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not cool. That's not a good.
We don't want chunky funky right now. Uh-uh. That's what's happening.
We don't want
all
that stuff
chunks.
Flying.
No.
I gotta say, Janeway, you know, in her instinctual, and maybe this is part of the theme, we'll get to that, but, you know, there's no science. It's not like she says, you know, at certain coordinates, fire this thing. Like, we haven't really thought through the science of blowing this thing up. We're just going to kind of blow it up when we feel it. Like, she's literally just kind of walking and looking and then, okay. Like, if we had blown it up a long time before, then these fragments wouldn't be crashing on the planet and potentially killing thousands of people. So again, Janeway's like going with her gut. I'm just going to walk up. I'm going to look. I'm going to feel it
right
about now. That like out of the gate, I was like, not again. Janeway. You're going with like your gut instead of going, let's figure out the telemetry. Let's figure out the mass and the weight and all of this. Let's know what we're doing before we do it. It's just like, nope, let's dive right in and blow this thing up. And
right.
That was,
I like your theory. I like your theory. Okay. Well, what bugged me, or it didn't bug me, but it pulled me out a little bit, is the establishment of the aliens, you know, the first time that we see these two aliens, and I'm just looking at them. One is the ambassador, and the other is, we later find out he's an exogeologist is who he is. So, you know, two people in civil service, basically. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, huh, first of all, we don't even know who they are. There's no mention of their name until later. 10 minutes left in the episode, Janeway says, this space belongs to the Nizu. So now we know they're called the Nizu, but we don't learn that to the end.
We don't know that for most of the episode.
No, but what pulls me out every time I look at any actor playing a Nizu is that what I call a skin goatee. So it looks like a goatee on their chin, but it's made of skin, their skin. And it's kind of like... I'm looking at some type of lizard almost, you know, how it has like a little bit of a chin there.
I didn't love this makeup.
The makeup.
And I love Mike Westmore. He's a genius. Mm. And that whole department, they're geniuses. This one I didn't love. It felt a bit derivative. It felt like, I don't know. It just felt, I don't know.
So it pulled you out as well a little bit. Yes.
It did. The makeup pulled me out a little. The fact that we didn't know who these people were, but we see them there and then you know, we realize that these fragments landed in the desert, we find out.
Thank God, the remote desert region, right?
Remote, yes, the western deserts or something. And,
correct.
And it's created this giant dust cloud and contaminated debris. Mm-hmm. We also realize that there's another asteroid heading in, and this one is headed to the coastal region where there's 5,000 citizens in the city near that path, and that there are a dozen more asteroids heading this way. This is a huge natural disaster.
Yep. Six hours until the next asteroid is going to appear.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then they get a sudden communication from the planet. It's very broken up. It's the staticky kind of message. And I think his name was Dr. Vartum.
It's Vadim.
Vadim.
So
thank you.
Like V-A-D-I-M. But I think if you look at scripts of Voyager online, it's spelled V-A-T-M. So there's not even a Vadim. Consonant between the last two. Yeah, Dr. Vadim.
I couldn't quite understand because it was a broken up message.
I got to tell you, man.
To me or something.
Yes, there's Vadim. A lot. There's same for me. This entire episode was me rewinding going, what was that guy's name again? What did he just say it was again? And we'll get to that point when we talk about the other people. So Dr. Vadim's message, he's the most prominent astrophysicist. He says the asteroids are not what they seem. They are composed of some type of artificial materials.
Material, yes.
Right.
And then the transmission is lost.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of get part of this thing. They can't find the location of this signal because there's too much interference.
Right.
So Janeway decides to send out three shuttle rescue teams.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, let's get this going. And Chakotay tells B'Elanna, he calls to B'Elanna on the comm and says, beam aboard some samples of that asteroid so that we can analyze it and see what's going on, why this thing didn't vaporize.
Correct. I have a question for you. Before she beams, before they beam over the fragments, before she sends the rescue teams, there is some concern by the ambassador that Janeway, you know, may not be able to help any further. And so she says, in for a penny, in for a pound. And she says, it's a human expression. I'm just going to ask you, is this an expression you grew up with?
Oh yeah. I've heard this.
Expression. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard. I mean,
it probably goes back to like England, old England or something.
I suppose. Yeah.
You know, a pound is like, is money.
Correct.
In England. So I don't think it has to do with weight. I think it's in for a penny, in for a dollar, like whatever.
Understood.
Like I'm going all in.
Yeah.
So
but I've never really heard anyone use that in America.
Mm-hmm. I've
in
heard it.
Country, but you have heard it.
Heard it. Okay. It's official. Okay. we go. So by the way, Janeway has got a hairdo that's like kind of half Bun of Steel and half, you know, Party in the Back.
So it doesn't know what it wants to do. Basically.
It doesn't know what it wants to do. I think it's a flattering, you know, it's flattering. It's not as formal as some of her hairdos, but I was like, oh my God, here's another hairdo.
So is that her version of a mullet? So she's business up front and then party in the back?
Party in the back. Oh, okay. It was a bit of a mullet, a Janeway mullet, I think. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we go to sick bay and Neelix is rushing in. And he is high as a kite. He's like so excited. He is talking so fast.
Yeah.
Super excited to go on this mission.
Nervous is what I'm going to say. He's nervous.
And nervous to be teamed with Tuvok, he says.
Yeah.
And I love, and by the way, he's in there with Kes and the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just odd to me that like we're on Kes's back. I don't think we ever saw her face.
Yeah.
She offers to get him, you know, some medical supplies or something. And she leaves. And there's just no, you know, for the love story of Neelix and Kes that was.
Yeah. Yes.
It was an odd interaction because it was nothing intimate or personal or like Kes knew him. She didn't hold his hand and say, she didn't acknowledge the fact that he was acting crazy.
Yeah.
She just said, I can get you this thing. And she goes. It was an odd exchange, I thought, with Kes and Neelix there.
I agree, but it's both ways. It's not just how Kes reacts to Neelix, but it's how Neelix is showing how he is around her, which he doesn't show anything that he had any type of relationship with her in the past. And same with her. So it's almost as if both sides had no recollection of their prior relationship, unfortunately.
No, there was nothing in this. Yeah. There was no lines to address that. And I know it may not be the focus or the time and place for it, but it just, it threw me a bit. Like,
of course,
strange.
It just would have been nice if they tracked it a little bit. Just, you know, it doesn't have to be a big moment, but just a hand touch or anything like that, where there is a little bit of sensitivity and sort of like, hey, you used to be the love of my life and I still care about you kind of emotion. Yeah. It could have been nonverbal and that would have been fine, but they didn't track it.
It could have been even looks, but there was no coverage. There were no shots of Kes to look at him and to play that moment. So.
Right. And also, this is Shearer's first time directing us. I don't remember his name on the director list until this point, right?
Yeah, I think
and
this may be the first one.
If this is his first time, I'm sure nobody debriefed him. And oh, by the way, these two characters broke up. He wouldn't have known that. So he wouldn't have known. It's not on him, I don't think. All right, so let's move on.
I love the doctor's line, by the way, when he says, may I suggest a tranquilizer? Because Neelix is so wound up and nervous.
Yeah.
And he says he's nervous to be teamed with Tuvok, that he doesn't seem to ever be able to do anything right.
Right.
And the doctor just says, look, just relax. You don't have to do anything because you're just there as an observer.
Oh yeah.
You don't need to, you know, do anything right or wrong. Just watch. You're in training, basically.
Can I just tell you where my mind was going when I was watching this scene between those two?
Yeah.
I immediately thought about the fact that both of them auditioned for the other person's role. Bob Picardo initially auditioned for Neelix, and Neelix auditioned for the Doctor. And I was just imagining how these two actors would have played this scene if the roles were reversed.
Oh, interesting.
And it was Bob Picardo coming in as Neelix, all frantic. And then, you know, we have Ethan Phillips, the Doctor, the shorter in stature Doctor, looking up to the frantic, you know, lanky, taller Neelix, right? And then the way that Bob would have played that would have been a very interesting take on that, for sure.
So we cut to the shuttle ride. Tuvok is piloting the shuttle, and our alien visitor, which we'll learn later, is Sklar.
Here we go. When he said Mr. Neelix is in the shuttle, and he turns to him and he says, I thought he said Mr. Spock. I go, Mr. Spock, what? And then I rewind it. I guess Mr. Scrog is what I heard. But then I looked at the script and it's Mr. Sklar. It's S-K-L-A-R. This whole episode is, what was the name again? No one pronouncing anything clearly.
Yeah. And there were a lot of guest roles in this.
A lot of guys, and it's almost like, you know, in this scene, the issues with the shuttle happen because they're entering a layer of electrodynamic turbulence. There's all types of interference and stuff going on, and I almost feel like that's what's going on for this entire time that someone says any name. There's interference and turbulence from us hearing what that name
hearing
is.
Anybody's name.
Correct. Yeah, yes. Or not. Okay.
Tuvok says as they hit some really rough turbulence. And by the way, there was one moment where the camera kind of tilted, you know, Dutch sideways and turned sideways to suggest the shuttle is really descending out of control. And I loved how they both sort of leaned against the wall and they were all playing that action there, because the shuttles are just sets that sit flat.
Yeah.
So all the shaking, all the leaning, all of that, the actors have to do. And I thought they did a great job in that moment. There's some other moments later on where I had some issue with the environment.
Yes. Can you take a quick second to explain to our viewers what you mean by Dutch? The word Dutch.
Yeah, there's a type of shot where you take the frame, and instead of keeping the horizon level, you twist it sideways so that it's a kind of framing used often in horror films. I don't know why it's called Dutch. It probably has to do with some old European filmmaking. Maybe the Dutch filmmakers 100 years ago started shooting this way, but it just adds a dynamic kind of angle to the horizon. And so the camera will turn like 45 degrees sideways or something.
Is it always a 45 degree, or can you do a less of a Dutch?
You could
can
do
you
less.
Do a 30% Dutch?
Yeah,
then?
You could do a slight Dutch, or you know, you could go as
90 degrees. Can you do a 90 degree? So a 90 degree, would
that'd
that still
be
Dutch?
Much. That'd probably be like much. That'd be a little far.
It's too far. Okay, let's continue. I just want you to explain that to people.
Yeah.
All right.
So on the bridge, we go back to the bridge, and they realize that this shuttle is having trouble, and they feel like that we may have a team down, Chakotay says. And Harry's trying to reach them. He said, I can't reach them. There's too much interference.
By the way, this is the first time we see Harry in focus.
Oh, yeah.
In the very first. Yeah, it's because the first bridge scene, you have Chakotay talking about what's going on. And it just shows him in the foreground and Kim's in the background.
Yeah.
Out of focus, speaking, and they never rack focus over to Kim.
Well, I got to say, with Tom Paris, just to talk about our characters for a minute, I think I was in the opening shot at the top of it. And then I think that may be it, because Paris is supposedly on one of these shuttle
rescue missions. Yes.
Rescue mission. That's and right. So we only hear him later on.
Yeah, that's right.
From the shuttle. We don't even cut to him.
You don't even see.
Like, nah, we saw him in that first scene and that's about it.
That's good enough.
I don't remember if we see him at the
true.
End. But
I don't feel so bad now. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, it's just your audio. They didn't even cut to you inside the shuttle.
Nope, just a phone call.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, so Harry can't reach him. We go to engineering, and they have some asteroid debris. And I have a question for you. I took a photo of this. Whoa, where is it? There it is. Who is that? What is his name that's standing behind Roxanne? Do you remember that extra? He was on our show all the time, but I was like, what is his name?
Oh man, I can't remember his name.
Somebody out there, if you're, you know, those that have the video of this, there's some homework for you, because I can't remember, but he was always around.
Yeah, he was. He was. We really got to know those guys on a pretty, you know, good basis, except we can't remember his name.
I'm surprised they can't remember his name, because he was there for years. And yeah, it's funny, some of them were more talkative than others, you know. Some of our stand-ins, obviously, that stood in for our characters when they were writing.
But our show's unique, though, in that because we're stuck in the Delta Quadrant, we have the same set of crew, and it's the same set of background actors. We use the same people over and over again, whereas a lot of shows, you know, background are just, it changes every week. You know, there's never the same background person. So, yes, it's so bad. I can't remember that guy's name.
I know. All right, so they do have the asteroid fragment, so we know that that's on board. They've gotten it. And we go back to the shuttle, and it is dark, and we see Tuvok sort of waking up.
Yeah, they've crashed already, right? So the crash landed.
And he wakes up, and we hear some banging on the, you know, we don't know what it is, banging and banging.
Yes.
And we go, we see him get up and goes back to open the hatch, and the big loading door starts to go down. And I thought that was a super cool moment, like to feel this dark shuttle sort of get opened up. You're inside that experience of being in a crash car or crash shuttle or whatever.
Yep.
And it's black and it's smoky. And then all of a sudden that back door opened and you just saw this bright planet lights and the rocks.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought that was kind of cool.
So the door opens and guess what? It's Dr. Vadim. We don't even need to find him. He's there and he's with Han Juwan.
Yes. And he says, by the way, he goes, I heard what sounded like a ship crashing.
Yeah.
So we came, I was like, wait a minute, what?
Right. Yeah.
What does a ship crashing sound like? How does, in the middle of asteroids crashing on your planet and, you know, hazardous dust clouds everywhere and a natural disaster.
Yeah.
How did you kind of go, oh, that sounded like a ship crashing nearby? It was bizarre. I don't know.
He should have said, I saw the shuttle crash, right? Because you can see a shuttle if you're looking up, but
he should have said I saw it, or he just didn't. Don't
know. He said he heard. And he goes, and the same thing happened to the other guy. He heard it too.
Any of that, but I don't think he needed to. Just like knock on the door and we're here. Like
no, right. Yeah. So the other guy's name is Han Juwan, which to me is very Korean sounding. Han Juwan. Yeah. So Han Juwan is the miner. So he's a miner at a nearby Galasite. Yeah, the Galasite excavation. He's the muscle man. He's the heavy. All right. So Tuvok basically commands Neelix to go outside and inspect the toroidal antenna to see if any of the signal relays were damaged.
Yes. By the way, before Neelix goes out, before Tuvok says do this, they ask about the asteroid and he refuses.
Oh, that's right.
Name?
Yes.
Vadim?
Vadim.
Vadim. Mm-hmm. Vadim says, that's classified. I can't talk about it.
Right. Sklar is the one who asks him that. He's like, tell us what happened. What do you know about the asteroids? He's like, can't talk about it. Yeah. Mum's the word. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is a little weird. And Tuvok commands Neelix to go outside and inspect the toroidal antenna to see if any of the signal relays were damaged. And then Neelix tries to show Tuvok that he is capable, that he is worthy. And he says, oh, that's fine. If they're damaged, I'll just repair them. And Tuvok says, no. Just give me the damage report.
Yeah.
But Neelix is, you know, still trying to convince him. He says, look, I've been studying with B'Elanna. I know I can do this. And Tuvok puts his foot down. She's like, nope, you can't. You don't have that capability. I don't trust you. So Neelix goes out, kind of bummed out, you know, that he kind of got dismissed. We have that quick, funny, comedic moment where Tuvok says, Mr. Neelix, and he's like, and I'm going right now. So he heads outside, right? And he's using his tricorder and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then he notices there's an orbital tether. Yeah, anchored nearby.
Orbital tether that's leaving the planet's surface
and
going up into the atmosphere.
Yeah, so he runs in.
Yeah, he runs back in.
Yep.
And he explains what he saw. And he says, you know, this is like maglev technology, which is actually a thing. You know, this is real science. And I think there has been, you know, NASA studies and things about trying to create something like that with satellites or orbital stations around Earth. So this is a cool,
I mean,
kind of based on real.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at that, well, the technology that we have now is we have very high speed type of bullet trains that are on that, you know, rest on maglev type technology now as we speak. Yeah. Right. So if we have that going horizontally, why can't we engineer it so it goes vertically, right? It should be able to do that if you have enough.
In theory,
right?
I think is really interesting, even though it's kind of, at times in this episode, I found it to feel a little goofy for, you know, and the limitations of VisFX and set building and things like that. But I was fascinated by this idea. I think it's a really cool idea in reality that we could, instead of wasting, you know, tons of fossil fuels for, you know, rocket fuel to, propel us up through the atmosphere, why not create something that's much more efficient and you could get things off of planet Earth and out to outer space.
Free of gravity, and you're good to go once you're past it. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true. So Neelix sees this as a way out, right? And Dr. Vadim corroborates the fact that, yes, this is an orbital tether. We use it to lift cargo from the surface to our orbital supply stations using magnetic leverage to lift the carriage. And then, you know, then we find out that this tether is over 300 kilometers long. That's over two-thirds of the way between LA and Las Vegas, basically. Yeah. And if you imagine how high that is going up, that's crazy. And it'll take forever. But then Neelix says, look, we don't even need to go to the end of it. We just need to get above the ionosphere. We need to get above the interference that's kind of just blocking us from contacting Voyager, right?
So, and then we can contact them and they'll beam us out. That's all we got to do.
Vadim says the carriage was damaged on the last impact from the asteroids. The induction coils are offline. The Neelix, you know, using his brain, discovers a suggestion or solution. He says, look, we can replace the coils with attitude control thrusters from the shuttle. I mean, it'll take some reworking, but I think I can do this. And Neelix says he spent 2 years on a tether maintenance team on Rhinax, and the principles are the same. And Tuvok says, well, you know, the best chances of us being detected by Voyager or another rescue team is to just remain here, not going to a tether and whatever. And Neelix again pleads to Tuvok, listen, I've rebuilt a dozen maglev carriages. I have the experience. If I can't get it to work, then we can come back and wait for the others. And so Tuvok agrees. But again,
he's
this
very
whole thing,
insistent on, yes, and Neelix is very insistent on, I've done this before, I know all about this, and that's going to be important later on. So so Tuvok reluctantly agrees to Neelix's plan, and you know, that enthusiasm we saw in sickbay and his excitement to get out there and not just be an observer, but start putting together some of these things he's learned from B'Elanna and, and all of his Starfleet training. He's excited to put it to use. So he talks Tuvok into it. And and the next thing we see is this dark sort of station. It's the base station for this
the tether
base station, and they come in and Tuvok gets the lights going, gets the power running again, and I love this set, the base station part, because they had that big magnetic ball in the center with the lights on it and stuff. I just thought that was a cool design. It just looked really cool. It looked like a planetarium or something, like you would see with the, you know, projectors and things. I thought that was very cool. So they get the lights on and they're in this tether base station, and suddenly a woman appears. We'll learn that her name is Lilius, and she grabs Neelix and sticks a knife up to his throat. By the way, that looked like a Klingon knife that we recycled that she was holding. I was like, really? Can we make a different shape? I'm sure I would put money on the fact that that was used as a Klingon weapon at some point.
Yeah, because it kind of has that a bit of a blood groove going on there. It has a two blades in it. I thought, hey, this is kind of Klingon-esque, and what a fancy knife for this random Nizu alien to have on her person, right? It's like, oh, okay.
I also thought that you know, Klingon adjacent knife was oddly in the hands of someone who looked kind of like B'Elanna in some weird ways. Like, she had kind of the brown hair. I saw later
longer.
But the way that the makeup on the forehead and all of it, like, just something about her her aesthetic
yeah
was kind of B'Elanna-esque.
Yeah. You know?
And then to have a Klingon knife in her hand, I was just like, I wish they had distinguished her look a little more from looking similar to B'Elanna. That was one of my first thoughts.
Okay, got you. So Neelix at knife point is explaining to her, along with Tuvok and everybody else, hey, we're not trying to, you know, butt in on your space here. I know you've claimed this area, but we're trying to save basically our lives and yours too. And we're trying to get this thing to work, you know, and Neelix finally convinces her that she doesn't need to.
Well, yeah, she keeps saying, well, you can't do it because the oxygen regenerator is broken and he's got a solution for that. And she says another problem and he's got a solution for that.
Yeah.
And he really, you know, pleads with her and gains her. I think he is the one that gains her trust. And she finally, because she's like, everything's broken. It's not going to work.
Right.
He's got all the fixes.
Right. And he pulls her in that the lovely moment at the end, he pulls her in. He goes like, look, you know, what do you, you know, you must know a lot about, you know, these carriages. And she goes, well, not really. I'm a foundry worker. Yeah. And he's like, well, that's great, you know, because we need someone with metallurgical knowledge. So he takes lemons and he makes lemonade.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. I like that a lot. There was a part of me at that point where I was like, oh God, is he going to have a romance story? I couldn't remember. And then.
Right. Well, you're saying it didn't happen, but I do see it right under the surface though. I do see this as sort of a B story romance for Neelix. There's a little basis of a relationship going on here where I think if they explored it further, it would have been more, but you know, I think we're now moving into the science station, the rarely used science station on Voyager, right?
Is that what it was? I was like, where are we? I didn't know what. So yeah, B'Elanna's in there.
Yeah.
They're trying to break open this this fragment of the asteroid.
Yeah.
And I got to say, there were some lights that were coming down like on the wall, the disco lights. And I was just like, what, where are we? And why are those lights like so distracting?
The disco lights are in Club Tuvok, remember? They're not in the science station.
Yeah, they should stay in Club Tuvok.
Yeah. Torres basically analyzes with her tricorder the fragment, and she discovers that there is triadium, an alloy is detected, which is very strange. Chakotay, upon breaking open the fragment, he finds there are things inside which are not natural, and it is actually a control node for a guidance system. So these are not true asteroids because they are being guided towards a target. And that's when we realize, dun, 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 there's something going on.
Yes, very, very mysterious.
Yeah.
So we go back to the planet, and now they are in the carriage.
They're in the they're still in the tether base station at this point, right?
Oh, are
because
they?
Yeah, because they haven't gotten into the. They're trying to get everything ready.
Oh, right? That's right. They're still in the tether base station, but the carriage is right there.
Yes, the carriage is right there.
But I realized as they were moving around. That's right, because in this set, I made a note that this was the Unity set.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same they one. Had repurposed this. I could guarantee it as I looked at it. I was like, I really think that this was the Unity set.
The dimensions were the same, right?
It
everything just
very
seemed
similar. Yeah. Yes, a lot of the angles and things to me looked a lot like it. They still need to get the oxygen converters working, they talk about.
Right.
And Neelix, everybody's working to get things fixed up. And Neelix has a wonderful conversation with Lilius.
Yeah, because she's having issues getting a power relay online. So Neelix comes over and sort of plays the hero a little bit and recalibrates the pressure valve, fixes the issue. And after he talks about after finishing building a tether on Rhynax, they would always name the maglev carriage for good luck. And he asks her, trying to collaborate with her, any suggestions? She has none. And he says, well, maybe Alixia.
Alixia, yes.
Alixia.
And we realize that that's his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about some of the things when they were young, that she would take him on these adventures. And she was she always represented sort of adventure to him.
Yes.
And that this carriage and getting it fixed and heading up is going to be an adventure. So he thought that was a perfect name.
You know what I thought right here immediately? Because he talks about his favorite sister who always took him out to explore, right? Yeah. And when he thought about her, he thought of adventure. I thought about Alixia. Who took the place of Alixia in his life? Janeway. Janeway is the female figure that takes him out to explore. And then Neelix has already said, Johnny Phillips has said, whenever I played any scenes with Janeway, I always played it as if I was in love with her. And he's in love with his sister, clearly, right? I mean, you're going to have love for your sister. So I always, you know, watching this scene, I just started thinking about that relationship.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that came up for me.
Yeah. It was a very sweet scene with Neelix and
Lilius. Yeah. Especially the bonding moment that happens after he tells her that he lost.
He talks about losing his entire family. They were killed in a war.
Yeah.
Back on his planet. And he also reveals to her that he speaks to them, each of them, every night.
Right.
That he tells them what he's been up to and talks to them.
Some great character development. And then really Lilius. Lilius then shares in turn. She says she does not even know if her sister is still alive. They were separated after the last asteroid broke apart, the fragments, the impacts. Yeah. And then at this point, Tuvok sort of breaks this wonderful bonding moment and character development moment by calling Neelix over to chastise him that he's wasting too much time on idle chit-chat.
Stop with small talk. I was like, Tuvok, why are you being such a jerk?
Exactly.
Like, Neelix is fixing every step of the way. He's been making the right call. Like, why are you being a jerk to him?
Totally. And at this point, this is when Lilius notices that Dr. Vadim is trying to launch the carriage by himself, and he's locked everybody else out, and everyone's screaming and yelling, and finally they get the door open. Tuvok runs in, Vulcan nerve pinches Dr. Vadim, and they now realize that they have to launch immediately because the entire, wherever, the whole station is about to collapse. They've got to get out of there.
Because Vadim tried to take this thing off before it was really quite ready.
Right.
It's now, you know, caused, the whole place is collapsing. Yeah, there's rocks falling. It was kind of cool to see some of that action going on.
Yeah.
I love the Vulcan neck pinch. That was great. Classic stuff.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
And they start going up, and it's a very rough rise up.
Yeah.
And Neelix has got a solution to try to stabilize it.
Right, because they're losing maglev cohesion. That's the words we're looking
maglev
for.
Maglev cohesion is weakening, and he's got to balance the power velocity. So the speed, you know, they've got to find that perfect sort of balance of speed and power. Mm-hmm. And they finally get the cohesion stabilized.
45 was the number? 46? Yeah, 40 something 45. Was the number, right?
I think it was 45 or something. Mm-hmm. And I love when he says, he sort of pats the console, the controls, he pats it and he goes, "Good girl, Alexia.
Yeah,
I knew you could do it." It was a very sweet moment.
Yeah. Every time that, you know, there's a sweet moment with Neelix, it is absolutely ruined by Tuvok. He jumps in and asks where the emergency containment grid is located. Now, Neelix is like, not sure. And this throws up the red flag for Tuvok.
Yeah.
And he walks over and says, "What is happening here?" And Neelix comes clean and says, "I've only worked on models, not the real thing." And so we now know.
Yeah. He was literally building like
Neelix is a nerdy miniature train. Like he's a train, you know, people that have that huge, their entire basement filled with model trains, like a working model train thing. That's the image that I got, that Neelix as a hobby was a model carriage builder. And of course he loved it and he did everything as realistic as possible, but he's never had any experience on the real thing. Yeah. So Tuvok is completely beside himself, but there's nothing he can do. They're already on their way. There's nothing you can do at this point.
Yep.
Lilius is about to throw Dr. Vadim out the door. And I just want to say, we've talked about on this podcast before how difficult it is to pick up another human being for any shot. You know, and that's happened a few times. Chakotay picks up Janeway, you know, someone else picks up someone else. And it's very difficult. But in this scene, Lilius is one-handed dragging Dr. Vadim towards the door. And I thought, no, that's not going to happen. It's you need Tuvok two hands.
Tuvok intercedes as well. And then we have this moment where Tuvok's like,
why'd you try to launch without everyone
else? Try to launch? But he also has a fist grab moment that I thought was...
Oh, that happens after the why'd you try to launch, right?
Yes, because why'd you try to launch happens. You know,
Han Juan questions his authority. He says, who put you in command, right?
Who put you in command? They start to fight. Tuvok's like, you don't want to fight me. Mm-hmm. I'm a Vulcan. I've got superior strength.
Yeah.
And he goes for this punch and Tuvok grabs his fist. And then the guy's like, you know, starting to fall. It just... I don't know. This was one moment where I was like, this feels so cheesy to me. There was a few fighting moments in this and physical, some of the physicality that I just thought was, I just didn't like it. I didn't buy it. This was one moment where it's like, I get that this is true, that Vulcans have this superior strength, but to just sort of grab his fist and then hold him there while he grimaces was just, it felt cheesy to me.
When I was in college, I went on a summer program with all Chinese American students, and we had to do a talent show. And so I wrote a skit, and it was a cheesy, funny kung fu skit where I played an old kung fu master, and someone tried to challenge my authority, just like this scene. And they try to take a swing at me, and I catch their fist in midair, and it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, it's a little like larger than life, and a little a little goofy.
Definitely.
You know, it would have been different if he had thrown the thing and Tuvok had just gone whack, boom, and knocked him down or something fast. I would buy that, but just to hold it and then just keep holding it. And anyway, that was a goofy thing. We go back on the bridge and Paris calls in and says phone call only, no shots of him. He said
the voice of Paris.
That's right. He's on his third low altitude survey, no sign of our crew. And there's a big dust storm approaching.
Yeah.
And Harry says that there's now another asteroid coming, and it is
2 hours.
Yeah. This one is huge, half a kilometer faster than the others, and 2 hours till impact. Yep.
Hey, man, you didn't have to go to work. That's the good thing. You didn't have to come to work to shoot a shot inside of your shuttle. You just had to go to looping with your regular looping schedule and just throw that line in. So you actually had a little vacation.
It gave me a day off.
It did.
We go back to the lift, to the carriage. Neelix is sweating, which is always interesting to see sweat on a prosthetic rubber head.
but I
thought it worked. It was well done, because sometimes it can look cheesy too.
Yeah.
So the oxygen is thinning in this carriage, and Tuvok is going around giving people shots to oxygenate their blood.
Yeah.
Because he's Vulcan again, he's able to handle the thin, you know, this atmosphere.
Yeah.
Somebody says, who is it that said, is that a needle or something? Was that no.
Needle? What?
Yeah, he says
He says he's afraid of needles. Like, is this hypospray going to hurt? Like, he's afraid of the hypospray. And yes. Tuvok's like, no, it's just subdermal. It's just fine.
Subdermal transfer.
He says, I'm afraid of needles. Yeah. Yes. And I
love that little moment.
Huh.
It was not necessary, but it was just a fun little, like, that would happen.
Yeah, you know, it could. Yeah. So everyone is suffering from the initial stages of carbon dioxide poisoning. And so then all of a sudden, Dr. Vadim is trying to open the carriage door, and he's mumbling something, and he's going,
something about the roof.
Roof, I have to go up there. And he falls to the ground and he goes into shock and he dies. Tuvok is scanning him and realize, wait a minute, he just didn't die of natural causes. He was poisoned by the coolant. What? By the coolant used in the tether couplings. So they don't know who it is, but then it becomes
now it becomes
like a whodunit kind of a mystery, right?
Yeah.
So we don't know who it is, and there really isn't time to deal with this. Tuvok says, we'll figure this out later. And again, Han Juan questions Tuvok's command. Neelix comes up with this gut feeling moment that the carriage has to stop.
We've got to go up on the roof.
Yeah, there's something up there.
And it leads to a big argument with Tuvok and a really great scene, by the way.
Really good scene.
I thought Ethan Johnny Phillips did an amazing job with lots of big speeches here.
Yes, he did.
He says a bunch of good lines, like he says to Tuvok at one moment, he says, you have no feelings for me. Mm-hmm. he says something like, exactly, you have no feelings for me. Yeah. You only have feelings
against me. Yes.
I thought that was a great line.
Yes. And then his line before that, he says that Tuvok, you're filled with contempt and sarcasm and that you've been targeting all your hostility towards me. So Neelix is letting everything out now, because typically he's bit his tongue this entire time for the seasons 1, 2 and part of 3.
Yep.
Neelix has not said a word. And finally, now it's all coming out.
And he says at one point, which I thought was really important and well delivered and written, he says, you know, you don't have any instincts, Tuvok.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any gut feelings, and you don't really understand people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really important, because Neelix is he goes off his gut all the time.
Yeah.
And because he's the only one who can drive this thing, he insists that someone go on the roof. That's his gut feeling.
Right. And that trumps Tuvok. There's nothing Tuvok can say to that, because if they can't move, they're not gonna escape. They're gonna die, basically, right? And what's interesting is they're talking about he's the only one that can pilot the vessel. So I thought it was a carriage, right? So now they call the carriage a vessel. So back and forth, it's sort of like, what is this a carriage? Is
it's
it a vessel?
Elevator, basically.
Yeah, but they're calling it a almost like a ship in a way, right?
And which is interesting, because you know Neelix has already admitted that he just did models. He didn't really fly these things.
No,
I don't know how qualified he is. That you know, maybe the other guys couldn't figure it out. But
yeah,
but Tuvok agrees to go on the roof, and he says as he's leaving, he says, somebody says, how do you know what to even look for? You don't even know what you're looking for. And he turns back, he goes, I'm looking for Mr. Neelix's instinct. Perhaps it will be marked.
Best line of the episode. The first time we see Tuvok's sense of humor, there's something funny coming out of him, right? He's loosening up a little bit. Great line, though. Great line.
We go out on the roof, and this must have been a green screen. I could see that, you know, they're blowing the wind, and this was shot on a set piece, but with a big green screen behind it, so that the clouds and things are all back there.
Right.
Up on the roof, he finds a panel, opens it up, and finds this data storage device that doesn't match the rest of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls Neelix and says he's found this alien tech up on the roof.
Yep.
And we see Sklar goes up onto the roof through the open hatch and has a quick fight with Tuvok, surprises him, and throws Tuvok over the edge of this ship.
And you forgot.
And grabs his phaser. Tuvok loses his phaser.
Yeah.
And he goes over the edge of the ship. And we do see at the end of the scene that he's hanging on. He's grabbed a piece of the vessel on the side.
Right.
He's hanging on. So he's still there, but very, very precarious.
And don't forget what he did before that. He kicked Neelix off of the ladder to knock him into like a concussion, basically, right?
Yeah, and threw him off of a 10-foot ladder, you know, and Neelix goes flying through the air.
Right, and the data storage device, it has information about an alien starship. So that is another piece of information that the audience gets at this point. But what I found so crazy is that when Sklar is on the roof fighting Tuvok, it's like
another weak fight.
No, it bothers me because Tuvok is so strong as a Vulcan. We already know that he's able to catch the big worker guy's hand and overpower him. Right, the minor guy. But yet the nerdy exogeologist, who clearly has never been in the gym, he takes him out like he's nothing. Tuvok is literally a child, and he can just throw him off like that. That really bothered me. It was like, how did Sklar get hot? Yeah,
the
so
fights
strong.
In this episode, the fights and some of the physicality was very inconsistent. It didn't seem to all add up. I agree. Right. It was not a great fight.
Yeah.
But they go back down, and he tries to wake Neelix up, and Neelix is out.
He's
like, all right, we got to fly this ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the bridge, and they realize that they pull up on screen what they thought was the big asteroid that was coming in much faster.
Yeah.
But it's not an asteroid.
It's a starship.
It's a starship. Weapons are ready. Mm-hmm. And they must have, I think Chakotay says, they must have remodulated their shields to fool our sensors.
That's
right. So they were pretending to be
An asteroid, right. So they're hailed by the alien captain. And I wrote down, he says that we are from the Itanian order. But as I wrote Itanian, it autocorrected to Iranian. So it
says it's funny. Mine's autocorrected to Arabian. I did the same.
You have the Arabian order. I have the Iranian order.
Yes.
The Pahlavi Iranian order. So the Itanian order claims
this territory.
Yeah. You must withdraw, right?
Janeway says, no, this is the Nizu planet.
Yep.
And they have five colonies here and they're our friends.
Right.
But the aliens are like, nope, we claim it. And they threaten Voyager. Mm-hmm. They're like, you're not Nizu, and these are friends you're willing to die for?
Yes, you're going to die for your friends? Exactly.
And they disappear, and 10 minutes till they'll be there, we realize. And Janeway says, battle stations.
Mm-hmm.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Back in the carriage we go, Neelix wakes up, and he's got red blood. And I got a question about that. Did he always have red blood?
I made the same note. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought he had a different color blood before.
I thought he did too. yes. Blue or green or something.
Oh no.
I have a question mark.
Yeah, he has red blood. And the thing is, make note that there's a fight going on, a verbal fight between Sklar and the other two Nizu, right? They're just
there was a lot of off-camera dialogue in this.
Tons of off-camera dialogue, right?
Yeah.
But that's the only reason
arguing going on. Hmm. Yeah.
But that's the setup for Neelix to be able to wake up and be unnoticed, you know, by the others.
They don't see it. Yeah. They're busy arguing. He looks at the window, he sees Tuvok out the window, and while they're arguing, he opens that door.
Right.
And it leads to, with a wide open door and the wind and the atmosphere and all that, and no oxygen, they have a big giant fight. And this is where I was like, I just didn't buy the physicality of it. I didn't buy the air pressure would be sucking everybody out at this point.
Yeah. Where did the data storage device go? It's still inside the carriage, right? Because remember, it got sucked out of the guy's hand, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just, when I saw Tuvok outside the window, I kept thinking about William Shatner in the Twilight Zone when he's on the plane and he's looking out the window and sees the gargoyle, right? And no one believes him. And so that came to my mind. But so that fight was ridiculous because...
The fight was pretty goofy.
Just watching that, and I don't know what they were doing, that the final scene where Sklar falls to his death, it's sort of, I don't even know. It almost looked like he was CGI. Like he was,
I think it was
Sklar got CGI'd, right?
Yeah, he was CGI'd.
All right.
It wasn't great. It wasn't great vis effects on that, I guess.
Yeah. It almost looked like stop animation photography, kind of like old school Ray Harryhausen kind of. Yeah. It was like, huh?
So, yeah. There's no movement to him or anything. It was just static.
Yeah. You know, and even when Tuvok comes in out of the outside, when he stumbles in, that's also CGI Tuvok, I think. It's very
that wasn't CGI, but it was not great physicality. I think that they should have, you know, he should have been by the side and grabbing. I don't know. I would have done that differently with really playing the air pressure and the wind and the all of those elements. It just felt like it was very
awkward. Awkward. Yeah. Okay.
Tuvok tries to help Neelix here. He says, you do have a concussion, but I'm not familiar with Talaxian, medical stuff. And so I can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
But Tuvok says, we need you. And
to operate the carriage. You're the only one that can do it.
Yeah. And Neelix very heroically, you know, he's not sure. And Tuvok says, do it for Elixia. She would be proud of you. And after he says that, Neelix is like, okay. That works.
That gets him up. He can do
it. Gets him up. Mm-hmm. We go back to the bridge and there's a battle going on. Bam, 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 bam.
We're losing. Our shields are going lower and lower and our weapons are doing nothing to this alien starship. At this point, the maglev carriage actually rises above the ionosphere. Now Neelix has to put the brakes on. So he stabilizes the carriage by engaging the induction dampers. And,
Shot out in space. We saw a CG shot of the tether and the carriage, and it didn't look good. Again, I just felt like it looked kind of like animation. It didn't look
well. I like that shot better than Sklar falling out of the carriage shot.
Yeah,
I mean,
I thought both those shots were a bit compromised just by the technology that we had at the time for the VisiFX.
That's
true. They just weren't. They were okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, they make it, and Neelix and Lilius hug, which was very sweet. Yeah. She's smiling. And then Tuvok gets a hug from, is it Hanjuan?
Hanjuan. Yeah.
Yes, which I thought was very funny. So the two hugs happen. They've made it into range that they can be transported. And yeah. So we cut back to the bridge, and Tuvok is now stepping onto the bridge. And he said the data pad has all the info they need about their weapon systems,
right,
and all of that. And so they input that data, they take that data and use it to beat the ship, and they defeat these bad guys.
Okay, did it bother you that there's no evasive maneuvers whatsoever in this battle? Both starships are just stationary, just firing at each other. It's like, it was a little... Is this 1850? Is this the Spanish Armada versus the English fleet? This is really kind of bizarre. There's no movement whatsoever.
Yeah, it was pretty simplistic.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted to get to the point where we get the data we need to be able to, you know, tie everything up.
Right. We go to mess hall now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's the conversation between Lilius and Neelix, and Neelix is explaining everything to Lilius, explaining how Sklar was basically an agent for the Itanian Empire Order or whatever, right? And that he was.
And the way that they invade, way that these bad guys, the Itanian Order, invades different places is unique. They create this false natural disaster, like this asteroid shower. And after the people have evacuated the planet or the settlement or the colony where they're at, then the Itanian Order shows up, and it's easy because now everybody's left because they thought it was this natural disaster when it wasn't. It's all man-made.
Exactly. Tuvok
enters and he tells Lilius that they found her sister, and she's very relieved.
And what was her name?
I can't remember.
Chala.
Oh.
And what is Chala? In the world of Judaism,
it's bread, is what it is.
It's the egg bread, that you eat on Shabbat dinner. Okay, there you go. So, nice. The challah, the egg bread, has been found, and so basically, Tuvok then tells Neelix that he's filed his report and he's given Neelix a special commendation for his endurance and bravery, which is huge for Neelix, because the first 2.5 almost, you know, 3 seasons worth of episodes, there's no commendation or praise for anything that Neelix does. It's always been very salty type of interactions and dismissive,
a huge turnaround. But they can't leave it at that, because then you know, Tuvok has to comment a little more, and then Neelix is like, you know, you always have to have the last word. And Tuvok's like, no, I don't have to have the last word. And Neelix is like, there, see what I mean? You do. And then he walks around the corner and he pops out, and it's very funny because we end on Tuvok sort of yelling around the corner, no, I do not.
Yeah.
And that's the end of our little adventure of Rise. Yeah. It was fun. There was a lot of fun stuff in it. What was here's my theme.
Yeah.
My theme, my takeaway, my lesson for this episode is to always remember, don't underestimate people. Don't underestimate people. People are capable of more than we give them credit for. I think that's the lesson I learned from Neelix in this episode was, you know, no one really thought, the doctor didn't think he was there to do any work. Tuvok didn't think he was there to do anything. Even with his lack of experience and maybe stretching his credentials a bit, he still was the one that became very heroic and solved problems. And he was underestimated every step of the way, but he came through. So don't underestimate people.
Okay. I'm going to say my lesson is that Vulcan logic has its merits, but you really need to trust your gut or your instinct, gut/instinct. You need to listen to that, because your gut can tell you things that your head can't figure out. That's one thing. But I also felt like, so Tuvok has this great line. He says, it is illogical to dwell on situations beyond your control. It will only serve to heighten your anxiety. And this lesson is for all the worry warts out there. There are so many people that think about future possibilities right? Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, this might happen to me. So I need to freak out now. And it's sort of like, yep. Wait a minute, you're freaking out about a potential reality that may not come true. I mean, this mm-hmm. is crazy. Mm-hmm. So, and that was when Sklar was saying, we're going to suffocate, you know, inside this carriage, we're not going to have right. enough oxygen.
Right.
And so
right.
that was one of the lessons that I also got nice. From this episode. And then the final lesson, one other lesson was just how Neelix dealt with Lilius. Lilius came at Neelix with violence. Neelix responded not with violence, but with empathy, with mm-hmm. love, with collaboration, with peacefulness, with calmness. And that is what this world needs. You know yeah. what I'm saying? Like if it's constantly going to be, we do this to you and now, okay. And then they do this back to us and then we do this to them. It'll never end. It'll mm-hmm. never end. World conflict can end if everyone takes this lesson from Neelix and yeah. responds to violence with love.
That's a good point. That's yeah. a really good point.
Well, that was a fun episode to recap.
Yes, it was. It was fun. It was a lot of fun for you and I, even though we didn't have very much to do. But mm-hmm. I do know a couple of people who had a lot to do in this episode.
Yeah.
And I think we should maybe talk to them and get some of their memories and thoughts about it.
Well, basically, guys, we have a special treat for you. We have both Tim Russ and John Ethan Phillips here to talk about their participation in this episode, Rise. All right, guys, guess who we have with us? Tuvok and Neelix, Tim Russ and John Ethan Phillips are here. And we have 2/3 of the Voyager boys dinner right here.
Oh, yeah.
Four of us. We're missing Cote and we're missing Picardo. So we're missing Picardo and Beltran. But we have 2/3 of the Voyager men's dinner, which we had every month, practically, gentlemen, for 12, 13 years, I think, after the show ended.
We had a lot of dinners. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. Oh, so much fun. So much fun. And what did we do at dinner? We ate good food, we drank good beverages, and we laughed our butts off, yes, which is what we've already been doing before we started recording this. So welcome, Tim and John Ethan. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. Okay, Rise. Both of you watched the episode, I take it? Yes?
Yeah. No, I didn't watch it recently. I watched it not too long ago, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. About six months ago.
Yeah. All right.
Fun. It was a fun episode. Still, actually, one of the ones that I like out of all the ones we did, I actually like that one a lot.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you like it so much?
I liked it because number one, it's like a murder mystery, and I dig the heck out of that as far as the concept goes, and the fact that we were doing this sort of maglev thing that was going into space, this elevator thing we're all on. And it's like a pressure cooker, that episode. Mm-hmm. And my being able to work with Johnny in that capacity, the way our characters interact with each other was totally different than anything we had done on any other episode. Mm-hmm. It's always been, most of the episode, he's doing something and I just get mildly annoyed with him. And that, we were nose to nose.
Yeah, it was a real, I think, important character development, a show for Tim and I, for Tuvok and Neelix. And we had a real standoff, but I think we came to an understanding each other.
Oh, I think you had a breakthrough. I think your characters had a breakthrough. It was a breakthrough episode for you guys.
You're absolutely right. Every Tuvok Neelix interaction up until this point are just appetizers.
Yeah,
and now this episode, this is the entree. This is finally the entree. You get to see something of some weight here. No.
Yeah, yeah, and it's that one scene where we're just, it's a standoff between the two of us, and mm-hmm. And neither one of us are giving ground,
until
the very end, and my character actually gives ground, which
he does because he understands that I felt disrespected.
Yeah,
and then you're able to acknowledge that and admit it, which is a powerful moment.
That's a very powerful moment. That was very cool.
Another weird thing I remember about that episode is, correct me if I'm wrong, but was there a character called Sklar?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's when I started riffing about how they come up with names for these aliens, Sklar, Klornik, Blackfeet. Pretty soon, they're going to just throw something on the ground. They're going to call them. And then, but finally, they're going to run out of names. We're going to have aliens named Kevin. You know, and this is Larry from the Pekikian galaxy. You know,
yeah, they had Sklar. They had the Nizus. The Nizu.
They had Hanjuan, which is the minor guy, which sounds Korean to me. Hanjuan.
Right. And right. Then,
Lilius. That was the only kind of Lilius. Normal name. Female. Lilius.
Well, one of my favorite was the one on the first one you directed, the Trabe.
Trabe.
I think what they do is they just go to a map and throw a dart, and whatever country that is, they just go there and bring up Google what names are in this country, and then they just take names and
see them up there going through phone books from Singapore, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff I loved about like speaking of names is Neelix talks about his sister and his family in this episode, and he talks he names the carriage after his sister who. Yeah. He tells some stories when he was a young kid, how his sister would take him on these adventures, and he thinks of her as she represents adventure to him. So let's name it Alixia. That's her name, Alixia.
Right. You know, the thing was, is Jerry Taylor, she wrote a book about the origins of, about Kate. I forget what it was called, but it was one of the, but she wanted to have Neelix's backstory. So she used some of my own, you know, because I have five sisters.
Yeah.
So she gave Neelix like five sisters. And that's how that got in there. Wow. She decided to use that for my background,
I was wondering about that when I was listening to your performance in that speech. I wondered if you had had conversations with the writers about your family. Could you talk so authentically about your feelings about your sister? And, you know, Neelix did. Mm-hmm. It was just such a great performance and very moving.
Oh, thanks, Robbie. Thank you.
Emotional and authentic and vulnerable. It was great. There was a number of those moments, John.
Yeah.
That I think with this guest star who played Lilius, you were really, you know, she grabs you with a knife. She grabs Neelix with a knife in the beginning, and you calm her down by by just saying, I get it. Like, you're very empathetic and you're very, everything combative that she said to you, you turned into understanding and connection. And
well, when they wrote towards those aspects of Neelix, it was nice to play. When they did things like jealousy and think, I thought it kind of went against his character, but I mean, not that we can't all have different aspects of ourselves, but when they wrote towards his empathetic nature, it was fun to play that, you know, because it was meatier than just plain whatever anger or something like that, you know.
How many times did they ever have characters talking about their families on this show? It wasn't too often.
Not often, no.
Well, you did, didn't you, Robbie? You talked about it a little.
I talked about my dad a little bit. Yeah,
right.
That came up a few times.
I had a wife and kids, and I almost never mentioned them.
Tapel, right? Isn't Tapel your wife?
Yeah,
right?
I had two children, and I never really mentioned them.
No, you didn't. Then I made this weird connection, Johnny, that, you know, you're talking about Alixia, your sister, being the one that brought you, that always took you to explore, all right? And then I thought, in a way, like Janeway is the new Alixia, because Janeway is taking Neelix around to explore, right?
Yeah.
And then I brought up the fact that you have mentioned to us that whenever you played scenes with Janeway, you always played it as if Neelix was in love with Janeway.
Yeah,
you know, has this love for her like that, a deep love. And that deep love for your sister is kind of transferred onto Kate in a way, or Janeway. So that's something that I pulled out of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's true, Garrett. You're right. Yeah, it was some lovely stuff in there. Yeah.
Can what I just show you?
What season is that? I'm just curious. What season?
Season three.
Second half of season three.
Okay. Yeah.
Back half.
And what I just love so much about Neelix is that you had the freedom to really just pump it up in terms of how you decided to deliver a line, whereas us human characters were relegated to being very militaristic.
I remember the first season, you know, the first time he was handed something to eat, somebody gave him some potatoes, mashed potatoes. And I just started eating with my tongue. And I said, what are you doing? That's how Talaxians eat, you know? But they said, no. And then that's when they explained to me, he's just a guy with rubber, basically. He's a humanoid.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the director, Robert Shearer? Do you remember?
We don't.
I do.
You do?
Tell us what you remember of Robert Shearer.
I just remember the name. I don't remember his personality. Was Shearer the one that had the Australian sort of hat? One of them wore almost like a base, not a cowboy kind of hat, but it was leather or something. Was that?
That's No, that's Cliff Ball.
Cliff Ball, yeah. I remember Shearer mainly because he was very quiet and very, he was not a conversationalist. He was kind of not aloof or anything. He was friendly and everything, but he was a quiet dude. And I remember he didn't gave very little direction. He was very happy with everything that's done and very efficient. But I think we only used him once or twice, if I'm correct.
I remember the name, that's all. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's funny. But it's interesting you say he was quiet, Johnny, because that makes sense to me, because I don't remember him at all. Mm-hmm. Garrett doesn't remember him. The name is familiar, Tim, like you said to me, but but if he were that quiet and kind of, you know, the personalities I remember, people like Cliff Bowl, he had a big personality.
Yeah, Bowl was great.
He Rick
was
Colby, great. You know, right. Rick Colby, Alan Crater.
I loved Jesus Trevino. Is that his name?
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. Yeah. He was a sweet guy.
And, you know, and Robbie brought up during the recap, because both of us couldn't remember even what Robert Shearer looked like. And he said he was probably not very outspoken. He was probably more quiet. And
he was
just guessing that. And he was right, because you remember that, Johnny. This guy didn't give a lot of direction, right? So he was almost like a fly on the wall director, which is rare. Like, we're used to people saying, like, come on, Robbie, you're the one that wants to go home.
But, now, who was the guy who said that? Who was the director who said that?
That was Jim Conway.
Jim Conway.
Come on, Robbie, you're the one with a flannel lunchbox.
Yeah.
Remember, we did that bit for months.
You would make up so many other fill in the blank reasons. Robbie, you're the one that wants to buy Girl Scout cookies. You would just make up random stuff.
Come on, Robbie, you're the one in love with nursing bras. Let's go. Whatever the hell we come to our head, you know?
Who was the older guy, sort of short with glasses, black horn rim glasses, and he had, you know, his basic gray hair, and he would just sort of. And he had, like, he'd have a fanny pack or whatever, walk around. God damn, what was his name?
Alex Singer?
It might have been Singer. Was it Singer?
Yeah, older dude. Did he talk like this? Did he say Tim?
You're an old cat. He's kind of short.
I remember Alex Singer.
I think that's Alex.
I think that's
Alex. Alex had quite a bit of a career, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Huge, yeah.
I think it was Alex.
Still alive now, too.
Yeah. Is he?
Yeah. Shearer passed away in 2018, so he left us 3 years ago.
Colby died years ago. Yeah.
Colby died years ago. Who's the other director that passed away? Ball, right?
Cliff Ball
passed away too.
He passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He was a young. He seemed young. I remember he was getting out of the business when he directed one of those shows.
About to leave the business. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim, when you're thrown off of the carriage and you're hanging off the side of it, right? Well, we think you're dead, but you're not. You're still alive. Shot on stage 16, green screen, everything.
It was on, right? 16. Yeah, they had to build it because they built the whole carriage set.
Yeah.
There. And we're hanging off the side of that thing to do it. Yeah, that was all very cool stuff, man. Again, I really enjoyed that episode because we got to do some really interesting things, some cool stuff you don't get a chance to do that often at all.
Right.
And those are rare opportunities.
How often do you think you watched episodes?
I can tell you right now, I've seen about 15 of them.
15 and that's it?
I have to agree with Johnny. I think maybe I've seen 15 or 20.
Wow.
At the most.
Robbie, before you started doing this podcast, how many had you seen? Would you guess?
Three.
Would you say three?
No. But maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Honestly, I bet I could count on two hands how many I saw.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's hardly any. Yeah.
Well, I made up for all of you guys. I think of the ones, let's say we did 172, whatever the number is, I think I saw 169 of the episodes.
Really?
When they aired. Yes. I made it a point. I said, I'm going to watch it in my, if I was working, I would watch it as it aired live in my trailer. I would watch it. Oh, yeah.
When we were making them, we were so busy. The hours and days were so long, and we were so immersed in making it.
Yeah.
And we were watching each other do the scenes, and we read the script. To me, it seemed, logical to then sit down and watch it.
I got to say, I hadn't watched a lot of episodes before Garrett and I started doing this kind of rewatch thing a little over a year ago, and now we're halfway through season 3.
Right.
And I gotta say, like, I have really been impressed with each and every one of us in different episodes. I've been impressed with the series as a whole. I mean, there's definitely some episodes that I think are duds, and we talk about it, and I'll give my thoughts or opinions on that when I feel it. But I've been surprised at how many have really moved me.
Yeah.
And how many have really made me think. And and how impressed I am with each of our castmates and some of the great work they did. And mm-hmm. it's a good show. Like, we made it.
Is it a popular show? I mean, in terms of, you know, the history of the franchise, is Voyager considered to be?
Voyager is probably right up there at the top.
It is?
Yeah, top two or three, because we had a show that, our concept of our show went back to the original series. We were exploring uncharted space.
Right.
So we could do anything we wanted for our episodes. We weren't tied into the lore and the characters that had already been established and all right. this and things and the politics. You know, we mm-hmm. weren't tied into any of that. We could mm-hmm. do anything we wanted. Yeah. So we could come up with really, you know, it's almost like a serial in a sense, because each one of the stories was completely different. I mean, entirely different yeah. civilizations and circumstances every week almost. And I think that what people that have talked to me about it said, yeah, they really like ours compared to DS9 or something else because of just the fact that we could do anything we wanted. And our circumstance was a desperate circumstance. I mean, it was, yeah. you know, it's basically being marooned in a part of the galaxy that no one's ever been to before. So it was fascinating. Right.
Right. I think some stats came out, Johnny, where they said that Netflix UK, they were talking about, of all the Star Trek that's been streamed episodes, that the top five Star Trek episodes streamed on Netflix in England, three or four of the top five are Voyager episodes.
Really?
Yeah, over original series, wow. over TNG, over DS9. It's wow. just, and Enterprise. It's like, my God,
ours
Voyager.
Is there. Ours is really up there out of all
that's
of
that. That's nice to hear. That's nice yeah. to know, you know? Yeah.
It's yeah. just a concept. Yeah. They really, their concept of putting it in that part of the galaxy where nothing else is there but us. And we're yeah. in a lifeboat, man, and we have to rely on each other to survive without yeah. any help, no tether to home base, no mm-hmm. nothing. And we're on our own. And that's, man, that's right there. You're driving a lot of drama just in that concept alone, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're right, Tim, that, you know, when you talk about the serialized quality and the, you know, kind of wide open possibilities of plots and stories, yeah. that's absolutely true. I wonder if, you know, one thing about this episode that was so interesting is how your relationship is with Tuvok and Neelix had a breakthrough. And that only feels like a breakthrough in the context of three seasons so far. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Yeah. they've built up a certain pattern and now they're going to break through into a new place.
Right.
So it's not really a standalone moment. It only is valuable in the context of that journey.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you guys feel about like the writing of the show or your characters? This episode had a quality of kind of breaking through a pattern in the series. Did you feel like the writers, you know, kind of tracked your growth and change, or do you feel like it was just
yeah? I think they knew that we had an antagonistic. Dynamic going on, and they just pumped up the volume, and then finally gave it, like you said, a breakthrough moment.
Yeah,
I thought they did a good job. Yeah,
yeah, because that's the. I mean, one thing, you know, talking about in terms of a being a serial content, the only thing that's not a serial in terms of all the episodes is the relationship between all the characters on the ship. That that you have to, you can't just tune in at, you know, midway through the series and figure out what's going on when those relationships yeah. have already been established. The only thing you're getting on those serial sort of sense is what the story's about on that particular episode.
Right. Right? Yeah.
Honoring this alien race or that alien race. But yes, the relationships are in a tether. They're in a long sort of thread that you have to kind of catch up on, or you have to be aware of how things are working. So if somebody just tunes into the one episode of Rise, there is something they can get out of it simply because the two of us are debating and discussing, you know, certain things, decisions we have to make on this, in this circumstance mm-hmm. that might save our lives or solve the problem. And at the same time, you know, the contentious aspect of it comes out. So if somebody sees that, I think they could get something out of it without having too much of a backstory, just because yeah. of what we're talking about. Mm. But if you've been watching the show all the way up to that point,
you it's know, more impactful. Yeah.
Then it changes dramatically because, man, we just go nose to nose, again in that yeah. one moment about
I think you watched it the same time I did, Tim, because I remember I think I told you I said you got to check this out because I had never seen it, and somebody told me they had seen it or something, and about six months ago or something, I watched it, and I texted you. I said, listen, buddy, this is a great show for you and I. Let's watch. You should watch it. I think that's what prompted you. I might have prompted you. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I said I've only seen a few episodes of Voyager. That's one of the ones that I had actually seen before. That's one of the ones I watched before, because I really just, loved the circumstance. I loved the fact that we were on this thing. And that we were trying to solve this issue. There was a criminal amongst us, and we had to figure out, solve the problem. But at the same time, you know, our lives are in danger, and you and I, you know, have this moment, and we haven't had that moment anywhere else on any other episode like that.
No, and then they followed through with it to the penultimate episode where I leave, and you and I have that incredible moment. But I look back on when I see a show like, I'm amazed at, I mean, I couldn't do that stuff now at my age. I couldn't wear that makeup for 16 hours a day. Right. I literally couldn't physically do it. I did a big makeup job about 10 years ago, some sci-fi show where I played an alien, and I had, it was a 5-hour makeup job. Wow. And it was an exquisite looking makeup, but I couldn't wear it more than, I had to get out of it after 5 hours. It was so suffocating.
Wow.
And to deal with that kind of those prosthetics, I think you have to be young, and you can't be a spry old guy and do it. Uh-huh. It's too hard.
Yeah.
The hours. It's the hours. We were there for so long.
I agree with you, Johnny. And you know, if somebody offered me a role that required all that, I might very well decline it. I'm just not interested in sitting in that chair for 3.5-4 hours, whatever day.
It's hard, and they're using a lot of, to my understanding, they're using a lot of silicone now, which I've also used in an episode of a show called Caveman. I remember Caveman. It was.
Oh yeah.
I played a character in that, and that was a 3 or 4 hour makeup, and with silicone, they glue the face and they glue the prosthetic, and the removal is really complicated. Wow. But it has the advantage of looking exactly like flesh. And moving like flesh, and being lit like flesh, so it's a much more effective makeup. But again, it's too timely, timelines. It's just oof.
Yeah.
You guys recall anything with the guest stars in this particular episode that played Lilius, Han Juan, and Sklar? Any interesting moments or funny things that happened? Anything with these guys?
Those guys were actually very good. I remember that they were very good. They were very professional.
I remember they were nice people.
I wonder how Rise rated amongst fans. Because I heard conflicting things about that episode, that people, not the fans, weren't all that jazzed about that episode. I'm not sure.
At least they don't hate it as much as Threshold. no matter what, no one's episode is going to get hated more than the one that Tom Paris did when Threshold, when he turned into a lizard. That is the most hated episode.
And had babies with Janeway Lizard.
With Janeway Lizard. And I got to say, like, I felt about Threshold, I had so much fun doing that episode, acting in it. I got to do things that I never get to do as an actor in terms of like character work and size and getting big and dramatic and chewing scenery. It was a blast. Is it a good episode? Probably not. not because like it's the story and the writing, so I think that is the problem. That's what people, I don't feel like what I did in the episode was
I'm blaming the writers, but
you're gonna have
duds.
Every series, I don't care where it is or what it is, they're going to have dogs.
Yeah.
They're going to have head scratchers and dogs,
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every single series, forgettable.
Yeah.
Man, why do they bother to do that episodes,
Right. Then you can have series where every episode's a dog and you wonder, why did they do this series?
Yeah. and then you have to wonder, why are you watching every episode of a dog?
And then you have to wonder, why are you even here?
I have to wonder, why am I wondering about all these things?
Yeah.
Why I'm watching those.
hey, Johnny, one thing that Robbie and I brought up when we were doing our recap was when we first see you, when you come into sickbay, you've not too long ago broken up with Kes, and there almost seems like there is no tracking of what's going on between those two characters. You know,
absolutely. That was an absolute afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, we did do a scene where we both acknowledged that we're not a couple anymore.
Really?
We shot it in the science lab, which was a set we didn't use often.
Okay.
And Kes and I had a closure conversation where I said, you know, and we said, we want to be friends now, and blah, blah, blah. And it was quite a nice tag to the relationship. And they never aired it.
No way. And that was part of the other prior episode is what you
said? Yeah, but probably, I mean, I don't know, but it definitely it was in season three.
Yeah.
I don't remember what episode it was, but it was a very good scene. It was easily a 6 or 7 page scene where we track what happened to us and what we think might have caused the split, but that we want to stay friends and blah, blah, blah. And it was really, wow. I hate that word, closure, but it was real nice closure.
Yeah, and
it's too bad that.
But omitting that literally is such a disservice.
It's so confusing.
To the Neelix and Kes fans out there, right? Because they want to know what happened, and they just completely brush that off and not even show that interaction. Mm-hmm. And they filmed it, a 6-pager. So mm-hmm. annoying.
And it was a beautifully written scene, I have to tell you.
Did you find out why they omitted it? Did you ever ask a question about that?
No. Never found out. I guess they. I mean, I don't even know why they didn't maybe use it in another episode.
Yeah.
You know, because it was a standalone scene.
Sure.
But I guess they just moved on. You know,
7 pages likely. Just time. They cut it for time. And
yeah.
And they cut it for time, definitely.
They cut it for time, and they probably couldn't have. They could have. You know, I don't even know if they had time to maybe were able to edit it down. You know, just mm-hmm. down and editing just to get to the meat of it and get out.
Yeah.
But probably didn't have time to do that. You know.
Also, I don't think that the producers and showrunners of our show valued those kind of relationship stories. They really wanted like standalone sci-fi concepts, let mm-hmm. them play out. They didn't mm-hmm. want to deal with long-term relationship consistency or continuity. Mm-hmm. There was very, very little of it. I mean, I guess Tom and B'Elanna got a little bit of that in later seasons, but right. you know, Garrett and I've even talked about the Chakotay Janeway relationship mm-hmm. and how, you know,
yeah, that petered out.
It whiplash too. It's like one episode they have a relationship, then the next episode they don't, then they do again, then they don't, then they do. Mm-hmm. You're like, which is it? It's just. But I think what it was if it was convenient to play that quality in an episode, they would do it. If it wasn't, mm-hmm. they wouldn't. Yeah. And I think that's right. probably what happened with the Kes and Neelix thing. They were just like. Yeah. That's not high value to us.
There was a lot of ambiguity about that relationship to begin with. Yeah. Was it platonic? Was it romantic? And it was shaky, you know, just the optics, you know, I'm an older guy and here's this very young girl who's ostensibly 2 years old in her race. Yeah. And I don't think they weren't sure how to handle it so much. And so I think maybe it ended, let's just move on and maybe they'll forget about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt strange in this episode because there was only one cross, one little scene, and mm-hmm. there was no acknowledgement of it. You know, there was no reference to it or anything like that. Tim, you asked, what do the fans think of this episode? I got a couple things. On Wikipedia, it gets a 7.3 out of 10. 7.3 out of 10.
Is that good? That's good, right?
That's pretty good.
Good,
right?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
That's great.
IMDb, it looks like we've got a 6.8 out of 10.
Excellent.
On Jammer's reviews, this has a 1.5 out of 5.
Oh, that's not good.
Strong.
Wow.
When this episode, I'm just kind of looking at the headlines.
Okay.
When this episode aired, it had 4.6 million viewers. 7 share of the network viewers at the time. That's a huge number. Like these days, there are shows that run for years that get less than a million views, a million, you know, first three days.
And
we had almost 5 million people watch this episode.
Wow. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're so happy to have had the two aliens that mean the most to us. We're so happy that they joined us. So thanks again, Tim Russ.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Great to see you guys. Bye-bye.
Sometime soon. Take care, everybody.
See you later, you guys.
See you guys.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was absolutely a blast having our two co-workers join us. So thank you so much, guys, for tuning in this week. Tune in next week when Robbie and I discuss Favorite Son, the big Ensign Kim episode.
Ooh, I didn't realize that.
That's
going to be fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. All right.
And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for all of your bonus material. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.